Anxiety and trauma can often go hand in hand. And when a client comes in struggling with both, it can be particularly challenging to work with. You see, like trauma, anxiety can get wired into the nervous system and take over the client's thoughts and actions. But what happens when the client is not only struggling with trauma-related anxiety, but also anxiety from another source as well? Here, Dr. Pat Ogden discusses how she works with multi-layered anxiety and why the practitioner can be a crucial linchpin in the process.
Something that I want to look at if a patient comes in with anxiety is what is some of the sources of the anxiety? Because patients can come in with anxiety about, say, their performance. Maybe they were criticized for making mistakes at school or in the family, so they got anxious about doing the right thing and not making mistakes anymore. And that's really a relational piece that needs to be healed within the therapeutic relationship. There can also be anxiety from a dysregulated nervous system from past trauma, a nervous system that's just revved up and can't calm down. And over time, that develops into pervasive anxiety that might have certain triggers, certain trauma triggers, but it also might not. It just might be a way of being for the person. So I feel like those two are to be treated differently, and sometimes they overlap, which is the case that I wanted to talk about a little bit. The case that I'm thinking of is a young woman who had both trauma and attachment failure throughout her childhood. She was abandoned at birth by both her parents. A neighbor took care of her until she was, I think, 5, and then she was given away again. Finally, she was adopted, but her adoptive parents, no, I'm sorry, finally she was taken into foster care, but her foster care parents turned her over to the authorities and the institutions when she was about 13. And she said she never had anybody she could count on, ever. During that time, she was often sexually abused and bullied. So there was the attachment trauma, physical trauma, sexual trauma. And one of her main beliefs about herself that made her anxious all the time was, I don't deserve love. I don't deserve anything. And she had this high anxiety. So one of our first interventions was to find out about the embodiment of that, I don't deserve love, and how she pulled in and made herself small and tight, and that tension exacerbated her anxiety. So one of the first things we did was work with the resource of helping her expand and breathe more deeply into her chest, relax her body, and that started to mitigate the anxiety a little bit. But that wasn't nearly enough. There was much, much more that we had to do in the therapy, and this was a longer-term approach.
Pat just made a great point there. Her client's beliefs were affecting her physiology, and that bodily tension was part of what fueled the client's anxiety. So naturally, the first step in helping this client was physiological. As we heard in the first module of this program, the module with Dr. Stephen Porges, and now here again with Dr. Pat Ogden, focused breathing exercises can be vital to this kind of treatment. They help bring a client down from a heightened state of arousal, and that helps them be less reactive. But as Pat continued to work with her client, she knew that the physiological work was just one part of the process. You see, Pat still had to address an important piece of the puzzle, a piece that was also impacting the therapeutic relationship.
I think much of the anxiety, for her especially, was, I'm going to fuck up. I'm going to mess up. And it went along with the feeling of, I don't deserve anything, and I'm just a loser. So we had to, for one thing, normalize that that's a natural belief that's formed from the kind of history you had. But second, we had to heal that within our relationship. because she would also feel like she was messing up within our therapy. So if she didn't do her homework, or if she was not able to carry through some of the gains that she had made, she would go right back into, I'm a loser. And the tension would come back. So we worked a lot relationally. Like, we worked with eye contact. Like, I would ask her to look into my eyes. And what does she see in my eyes? Does she see that I think she's a loser? Because I honestly didn't. I thought she was doing remarkably well, given her history. So this nonverbal intervention, when she really looked, she could see that. She could see that I didn't think she was a loser. And so then we started taking that element of our relationship back to the parts of her, very young parts, that had always thought she was just a screw-up. She didn't deserve anything good. So that relational element of healing that then changes how she lives in her body, it changes her emotions, it starts to shift her beliefs about herself. I think that's often important with high anxiety, as are finding the somatic resources that help calm it, like the deep breathing and the expansion in her body.
So as we saw, when treating multiple sources of anxiety, it can be helpful to take a multi-pronged approach. And Pat gave us two ways to work with clients with this kind of anxiety. First, we can help resource the client with exercises that calm the body and diminish anxious sensations. And second, we can help repair the relational element by creating positive attachment experiences. Those experiences can have an impact on every part of the client, especially the younger parts that are hurting. Now, in some cases, those younger hurt parts that Pat mentioned can be so powerful that they can overwhelm the client during a session. Dr. Richard Schwartz has often seen the paralyzing way that these parts can use anxiety to control someone. Richard has a different way of responding to this kind of anxiety. Some may even call it counterintuitive. You see, for Richard, these expressions of anxiety hold a critical opportunity.
The anxiety often is either an exile who has broken out at times and taken over, and so the person's having a panic attack. So in contrast to many other psychotherapies, particularly trauma therapies, if that happens, if I'm working with somebody and suddenly they have a panic attack in my office, I don't do the grounding thing. Like, look into my eyes, take some deep breaths, feel your feet on the floor. The problem I have with that is it gives the message to this little exile who just broke out that you need to leave. You don't belong here. So instead, when that's the case, they're having this panic attack, I say, it's so great you're here. You're so welcome here. I see you're really terrified and young, and I'm sure you're stuck in a really bad place in there, and we're going to help you. But it'll be a little easier to help you if you wouldn't mind pulling your energy out of her so she can be there with you. We're not going to lock you up again. We're just going to have you separate so Ruth can help you too. And boom, the client's grounded. And now I can have her work with this very scared young part. So that would be one example of where the anxiety is coming from, an exile. But there are protectors who will use anxiety to try and keep you small and safe and out of harm's way. And so if that's the case, then we it's different. We just work with them the way we work with protectors in general.
As Richard described, these very hurt parts in our client can use anxiety in different ways. It has a lot to do with whether the part is an exile, as Richard calls it, or a protector. Just as a quick point of review, Richard developed internal family systems therapy, or what we call IFS. In this approach, the practitioner works with the various internal parts of a client. So as Richard is talking about exiles and protectors, he's referring to different roles that internal parts can play. Now, protectors will often get triggered when they sense danger or vulnerability. Here, Richard gives us a glimpse into how this can play out when a client is struggling with anxiety.
There's another client I worked with who whose parent had a lot of anxiety and was sort of disabled by the anxiety. And this patient had to take care of her. And and so had a lot of mixed feelings about his mother as a result. Was embarrassed by her, was repulsed by how weak she was, and how much she had kind of taken away his life. And then, and she's dead now, but so as an adult, started to feel some of that same anxiety that he had absorbed from her. So some, there was a part that just took on, in an effort to try and make the mother feel better, would try to take some of her feeling. Well, that part was getting more and more prominent in his life and was making it hard for him to function. And at the same time, it terrified other parts of him who were thinking he was turning into his mother and you know, would have the same end. And so they would attack him for having the anxiety and the anxiety was protecting some exiles that he had never dealt with before. And so that polarization between these parts that were terrified of and hated the part that carried the anxiety took a long time to work out. But once we did finally, then we could get permission to go to what they both protected and heal that.
In Richard's approach, the goal is for the practitioner to work with the various parts of the client as an ally. As the practitioner uncovers the function that a part is serving, they can find the deeper problem that needs attention and healing. Now, both Richard and Pat have shared how understanding the source of the client's anxiety can affect our interventions. In the next module, we're going to look at how a simple adjustment to the way that we approach anxiety treatment can lead to new breakthroughs for our clients. I'll see you there.